You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He's speaking to us from Arizona. Welcome back to the last show of the year, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Jim, and to all our listeners, and thank you for having me.
We like to take a look at the numbers as we wrap up. I was going to say 1925. 2025. I didn't see any flappers out there. Anyway, I think our biggest winners have to be for the year the precious metals, with gold going up from the end of last year from about $2,600 to over $4,300 to close off the year. Silver from $29.32 to $70.62. And you said platinum and palladium also massive increases this year. Why did the precious metals do so well?
Oh, that's a big question. I really don't have the answer to that. I mean, we could speculate. Most of the common wisdom, it has to do with fear of inflation, the weakness, potential weakness, or continued weakness in the dollar, budgetary exuberance, and on and on and on. But other studies say the kickoff starts because of geopolitical risks and war, more than in terms of the economics, which is generally cited. So, a couple of years ago, if you recall, the Gaza invasion sort of triggered a big move in gold. So there is an argument that the geopolitical has a lot to do with it, much more so than the inflation or the government misspending, which has been going on for decades anyway, and gold wasn't really moving. So it's tough if you want to pinpoint it on inflation. I mean, that's what everybody says, but I mean, I've been trading and investing in gold for, decades, and you can argue why was it at $10,000 an ounce years ago, and yet it didn't happen. So my bet, it's just the cycle's called for the move now, and we've had it, and now we just have to see if this was a blow-off this year or the beginning of a multi-year move, which probably is the case, but we could be looking for another 4 or 5 years, but with some volatility along the way, Jim. So, but the big breakout occurred when we went through that 2000 level. So let's see how it pans out. But I would think you're due for some type of setback, some correction. It looks like what they term as a parabolic advance, particularly in silver. And if you look at the charts, just looks like the force of gravity has to come in here at some point.
Now, countries like India, China, Russia have been stocking up on gold now for 13, 14 years. Meanwhile, countries like Canada and Britain have virtually no gold at all in the vault. Is that a big mistake?
Well, history says that is a mistake. And, paper currency really doesn't last or deteriorates, and history proves that out. I guess you could talk about the British pound ruling the world and being a fraction of what it used to be, for example. And civilizations, governments, countries come and go over the centuries, yet gold is always there and seems to hold value through the centuries. So I think China is looking big picture, look at the poor economics of Europe and the poor economics of the U.S. in terms of debt and spending and misuse of funds and corruption and control of central banks, which has been a disaster. I've been a big critic of the Federal Reserve, but all the central banks do a horrible job in managing their economies and their interest rates and so forth. So, China's doing the right thing, looking beyond it. And, Putin and Russia, the same thing. He was a big bull on gold and accumulating it. So, barring some huge discovery here on Earth or in outer space, and suddenly we have, a surplus of gold around, and that probably if it occurred, we wouldn't hear about it right away anyway. But that seems to be the best store of value. So the moment it really proved out. But look at all the time it took for the Bulls to be vindicated, Jim. You know, look at the same story we're talking now. We could have spoken 40 years ago, you know, when gold was 800 and when it had its first big high and then it collapsed. You know, a lot of the same factors were in play then as now. So it's just a question of timing. And, you know, there's been a lot of manipulation in the market. I don't have to bore people with the stories, but a lot of suppression of the gold price, both by governments and by commodity exchanges and traders, and a lot of shenanigans out there, too. It's part and parcel to the whole thing. The bottom line is we are in an up cycle, at least probably another few years with some, you know, zigzags along the way. And whether it's going to be coincident with geopolitical, you know, risks which still exist out there, or other factors, you know, time will tell. But you asked a very pointed question, and I can't say specifically the reason why it happened.
All right, but there's a number of reasons. Then it's not just one. Yeah. And also with silver's rise, it's not just a precious metal for money. It's used as a commodity. It's the best conductor of silver. And I would imagine with all these giant AI data centers being built, they're going to have to use some silver if they want to keep things cool, because copper resists a lot more.
Right. And gold as well. But and also solar uses, which still is still very popular, despite it being poo-pooed a bit in terms of, you know, current politics. There's still a lot of people, including myself, you know, like the idea of a, you know, solar source of energy because of the costs and so forth. But, you know, it's expensive to set up and maintain, but you can save money versus conventional electricity. I mean, look what it costs now to create these nuclear data centers and so forth. I mean, it seemed to me if enough energy could be generated by solar, that would be great. Unfortunately, that's not the case, but for smaller uses, it probably, you know, is still well worth looking at. You know, one of the big solar companies is right here in Phoenix, Tempe, which is a suburb right near the university. And that company is Fuller Solar, which is a $280 stock. So that looks pretty strong to me. I think you might see a good year overall for the solars.
And someone just pointed out in an interview I saw that we don't know who the AI winner is going to be. We have all these big companies, Meta, Google, Elon Musk, all betting on AI, but just like the automotive industry or the computer industry, it usually shakes out to just a handful of winners. The thing to do is to bet on what they all need. And what they all need is a cooling, some way to cool off these servers that generate tremendous amounts of heat. So if you invest in companies that provide the cooling for these centers, you'll be the big winner. It's like selling the shovels during a gold rush. Not everybody hits gold, but every prospector needs a shovel.
All right, so I can learn something from you. Where would we look for cooling companies and stocks right now? Do you have any idea?
Well, just take a look at who sells air conditioners.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But cooling systems for computer servers and so on. And those are the companies that perhaps you might want to take a look at. It'll be slow, but or now that these centers are popping up everywhere, they're going to have to find a way to cool them.
And there's, you know, some conflict, as you know, with regard to those cooling, not the cooling centers, but the data centers, in terms of political backlash and communities that, you know, find it objectionable or creating either eyesores or interference with their own power needs and rising cost of power in those areas. So a lot of interesting times ahead. I mean, it's like you can just laugh about the whole scenario. I mean, just a handful of years back, you mentioned the strong demand for energy and the need to get nuclear underway, or, of course, they're talking natural gas as a temporary substitute, but basically the push toward major companies, you know, like Microsoft getting or getting funding for Three Mile Island, the old Three Mile Island. I don't know the current name of it. You probably know the name of it, but spending money on nuclear, which was totally rejected across the board. Now it's back in vogue. It just, it's just laughable, honestly, the whole situation. It was so obvious that we needed nuclear anyway. Where are we going to generate all the energy? So Wall Street decided, hey, we got AI now, and we need to build data centers. And, you know, we got to do all this, spend all this money and stuff now to get the power we need to do all this fast-track computing. Crazy. It really is. We needed it anyway, so that was the excuse.
Also, a lot of communities are upset that their drinking water is going to be diverted to cool off these AI centers.
Yeah, we're reading about that too. It's you know, but there's some resistance to building some of these in some of these locations as well. So it'll be interesting how it all plays out. But you know, big money will ultimately prevail, I'm sure. You know, when you get the big Magnificent Seven companies putting money into these projects. Mm. Of course, they claim that there's going to be job opportunities and everything else as well. So we'll see how it all plays out, but it's just an amazing turn of events. You know, being an observer of this for so many decades and years, watching the anti-energy and nuclear thought, for example, and now seeing it switch around and headlong rush into spending tons of money. The offset, of course, as you know, is the time it takes to get these things built, and then the other part of it is from the Wall Street perspective. Who's going to benefit financially from doing it? And will they benefit financially? And how long would it take for those benefits to be computed? So I think what we basically have seen now toward the end of the year is that Wall Street or analysts decided we got ahead of ourselves here in pricing some of these stocks. So we start to see a pullback. So that's probably the predominant theme here coming into 2026.
And what happens when these AI centers become self-aware and decide we need the water, not the humans?
That's going to happen, I'm sure. Funny scenarios, but that could be the case.
That could be the first one. I mean, without water, you don't have humans.
It's so complicated in terms of putting these packages together, and as you mentioned, the cooling aspects, now the water aspects, and, you know, where do we get all the materials that we need to build this, you know, and your mention of silver and gold and copper and need for rare earths and other materials to actually create these facilities. It's very complex, and there's a long time frame, too.
I know in Alberta they created a data center, and it was using excess natural gas from an old well, but they were using gas turbines, jet engines to generate the power. And of course, for the neighbors of a place like that, do you want 8 jet engines whining, blowing at full speed through the night when you're trying to sleep?
Yeah, that's the current solution that's being, you know, touted, that natural gas. In fact, there's a whole other story here why natural gas failed to rally as much as it has. It's been really down and dirty here for months and months and months, but the story was we needed natural gas power because it's going to take time to get all this nuclear underway. By the same token, as you say, there's a lot of demand for the gas generators, and a couple of big companies I've mentioned in the past here are producers of those gas generators, equipment. They also produce nuclear, but apparently there's a lot of demand for that gas. So apparently we have enough natural gas around because gas prices really haven't gone up hardly at all, despite a initial thought that winter was going to be rough here in the U.S. But the demand for those gas generators is there, until which time the nuclear takes over.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, if the precious metals were the big winners this year, what about cryptocurrencies? Bitcoin finished last year at $93,830. It's now at $87,650. So roughly it's lost $6,000 since the start of the year. It did have a big peak, maybe sucked a lot of people in. But why is it not the shiny object on the hill anymore?
Well, I don't have the answer for that. I'd love to give you the answer for it. I mean, the cycles indicated that we were going to do for some type of top this year. We got it in August at 126,000 in Bitcoin. The interesting analysis there is there seems to be a correlation between tops in the Bitcoin market and the stock market, usually about a six-week lag. So we'll see. You know, we start to get a bit of a correction, particularly in the big name stocks, the Mag 7 type stocks. You know, after the peak in Bitcoin, the other stocks seem to have recouped some of those losses, and we see indexes pretty much closing strong, except for the last two, 3 days, strong into the end of the year. But what is the actual reason? You know, it's a cyclical phenomenon, and some of the cycle work was indicating where gold could be strong here for several years and on, and we hit a big breakout point that cryptos hit a cycle top, and now they could correct for several months, which appears to be the case. So you may see a little bit of more of a recovery rally in the Bitcoin and the cryptos here into the first quarter of the year, but or even just the first few weeks of the year. But the chart is sort of saying that, you know, we could still see lower prices before a turn again, but we have to keep in mind that at least looking at the Bitcoin, you know, since, 2011, we've had such huge percentage moves up and down. This is sort of par for the course. So you just have to decide what your allocation is, and if, are you trading this market, or in the allocation example, are you investing in it? They're not going away. I can tell you that. There are too many government programs, and there's legislation pending in the U.S. Congress, like the Clarity Act and so forth, things that are coming. And I think you got to take a 4-year, 5-year type perspective with these, that ultimately they will be up again for practical reasons, not just speculative reasons. So to answer your question, why did it happen? You can argue that, you know, maybe the bubble burst a bit, interest rates were trending up. In fact, just looking at the bond market here the last few days, it's actually been going down, which means higher rates on the long end, the short term, despite the Federal Reserve lowering by a quarter point, and there's mixed reviews of whether they're going to lower again in the first quarter of 2026, and whether, even if they did, whether that's going to have an impact on long bond rates. So, you know, the crypto market may be responsive to the interest rate scenario. And, of course, you know, I've been worried about what's going on in Japan with the 10-year yield there well over 2% now, and the risk of the carry trade unwinding, and whether apparently already is affecting our long rates here. So maybe that's what crypto was looking at, you know, higher rates. And crypto survives and you know, thrives more on lower rates. That may have a lot to do with it, I think. So it could be a rough year for crypto.
Now, for other commodities like crude down over the year, taking a look at the numbers that I recorded, WTI crude, $71.81 at the close last year. Today, it's at $57.45. Is that a big disappointment?
Well, I was sort of bearish on crude for the good part of the last year or so. You know, I was looking for the mid-50s and maybe the high 40s, and it's been, you know, flirting with the lower end more than the higher end. But when you look at the charts, to me, it's, you know, I'm becoming a little bit more bullish on it, particularly since some of the big oil companies seem to be acting a little bit better here. I'm just wondering if the surprise to the upside might be crude oil going up, which is not good for the stock market or the economy. We don't have confirmation of that yet, but the charts are sort of, you know, indicating they could be under, it could be underpriced here relative to what's happened with gold and silver and other metals and other commodities, that maybe there could be a catch-up play, so to speak, in the crude oil, considering, you know, what other commodity items have done. So we'll see. It's I'm leaning more to the bull side here, but I'm waiting for some further confirmation. So particularly, you know, the way the charts are, you know, forming right now, so it should be interesting. And then we're seeing some big name stocks, as I mentioned a moment ago, all the Chevrons of the world, and even Occidental Petroleum, Warren Buffett's big favorite, looking like it might have etched out a little bit of a trading bottom here. So something could be going on, and it could be geopolitical. You know, we all think that the Ukrainian war is going to be resolved, and it's not going to be any more crises ahead. Meanwhile, Iran is still threatening the West, and there's still a lot of uncertainty out there, despite Donald Trump's great attempts to create world peace, and hopefully he does, but there just seems to be a lot of tensions out there, so something could spike crude oil here. It could be interesting this year, so we're watching it carefully.
Well, there's no money to be made in peace. You know, military equipment is so expensive. One artillery shell, a GPS shell, $50,000-$75,000 for one shell.
Wow. Well, unfortunately, that's the industrial military complex theory going way back to Dwight Eisenhower's comments. So that's, and then you got secret programs going on that we're not talking about. And I've talked often about secret space programs and other things that money's been siphoned out for, and all military related. So unfortunately, that's part and parcel to our economy. So you're right. You know, stock market or these stocks like war, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, Congress every year, how much of their budget goes to military spending that doesn't have any ID? It's just a black hole they shovel cash into.
Amazing stuff. Really is. Really is.
You're not even allowed to ask about it now.
Well, now I know Donald Trump, they're trying to rebuild or expand the U.S. naval fleet now, and there's that new super carrier that talking about building, and there's like one or two stocks that that are supposed to be big names in the shipbuilding business that benefit from the military expenditure for the Navy and these super ships that are on the drawing board. If I'm not mistaken, like 20 huge ships are planned, but it takes several years to get these things built. So, yes, it's definitely a military component here.
Now, on the geocosmic front, is there anything of interest going into the new year?
Well, I warned about the winter solstice, you know, on the 22nd of December, that, you know, nothing is carved in stone, but I warned, you know, change of direction in the markets, you know, as you approach and around the seasonal patterns. Again, nothing is 100%, but it doesn't surprise me. The markets have been acting sloppy here and may continue on and off into the first quarter of the year. And then, of course, then we have the vernal equinox coming up the third week of March. So, you know, one could argue that the big seasonal patterns indicated a top here toward the end of the year and a low into the first quarter, perhaps even as late as March in 2026. And, you know, that's like the big picture potential forecast, and you got to sort of fine tune it with everything else, of course, just one idea, but that certainly was a factor here. So when you know, what else, you know, can you do but, you know, look at these things and try to see if there's some correlation with what's happening in them versus the real world. And certainly it does happen.
Now, President Trump has dropped strong hints that he's going to change the legal status of marijuana to that of, say, Tylenol and aspirin. Any signs of that coming to fruition in the new year?
It seems that's what the plan is. You know, the executive order that he signed, I think I mentioned this last week when we spoke, you know, that signing ceremony at the White House is really fun to watch in terms of the comments that were made and, you know, the presentation that was pro rescheduling. There's actually, I think it was the side note, I think it was the head of Scott's Miracle-Gro, the president of the company, said there was actually discussion prior to that meeting that some arguments said, well, don't reschedule from 3 all the way to 1. Let's stop at 2 and think about it. And everybody was laughing about that for a while. But Apparently, the executive order doesn't immediately change that. It's now directed the DEA and the other agencies involved to get it rescheduled. So that actually hasn't happened yet. But there's so much going on here, and you got to be bullish long term, because ultimately it's going to be federally approved nationwide as it is in Canada. It's just not happening so fast. So it's a crazy situation here in the U.S. A lot of crazy people. You know, it's like arguing for prohibition or against prohibition in the 1920s. I mean, you know, either it's legal or illegal, and you got about 20 states in the United States pro it, and the rest are not, and DEA scheduling issue and Banking Act issues so that people can conduct business. I mean, it's really a circus with regard to the cannabis. And I know people are strongly against it. Well, you know, I'm strongly against people taking a lot of prescription drugs and the drug companies, and I'm strongly against people becoming alcoholics. But these are extreme examples, and cannabis has been around thousands of years and has helped and continues to help, at least in anecdotal studies or reports that you read, that it has helped a lot of people. So we got to get our act together here. It should be federally legal across the board. Just like, you know, alcohol is legal, not illegal, like it was 100 years ago for a short period of time. And I don't know when all this is going to get straightened out. It's been going on for years. And I think, you know, people are just got their heads screwed the wrong way here, because people are going to get their hands on it one way or another. You know, our lesson from Prohibition taught us that. And, you know, it could still be, you know, a push on the part of the drug companies, which I'm very much in the camp of Robert Kennedy Jr. You know, I'm sort of anti-drug companies and have been my whole life. I've seen drugs kill more people than help them. And we can get into a whole discussion about that. So it could be the drug companies pushing against cannabis and the legalization and everything, because the evidence does point. Again, this is not pure scientific studies. It's anecdotal, but there is benefit to it. So long-winded response to you. I'm sorry about that. I just don't know where it's all going, but the president was at least in one instance trying to get this thing straightened out and get some uniformity here. So we'll see. You know, hopefully it does get straightened out. Meanwhile, those who are in the stock market, like myself, you know, we're looking at some of the cannabis stocks, and, you know, there's a lot of tradable opportunities there in that sector, particularly with some of the smaller companies that actually do make money. Always we do have our cannabis letter out there. It's called a Cannabis Sector Report. And, you know, we do follow those, because many of them are really cheap compared to where they've been. And they had a nice pop here, as you know, in recent weeks on the speculation about the rescheduling. But, you have to really study the news carefully and understand that that is only one aspect of what needs to happen.
Mark, I think next week we'll have a chance to test out your theory where the first week of the year sets the tone for the whole year.
It's the old January barometer, and it should be funny. I think it's got about 70% accuracy. You have the two levels of that. This is not my creation. It's that of my old friend Neil Hirsch, who back in the 1970s created that in his famous Stock Trader's Almanac, which I was part of in an indirect way, one edition, but I think it was the 1987 edition. In any event, he analyzed that and said, watch, the first 5 days is what he called the early warning system, and you're comparing the close of the S&P today to what it does in the first 5 days of the year. And then you have the whole month of January is the month as a whole net up or down as compared to the December 31st close. And the two of them, if they're in sync, seem to have some statistical reliability in calling for the year. There's some explanations for this, going to political situations, ability to Congress and so forth, which I detail in my newsletter. But it was interesting to see how that plays out. But this is like the winter solstice scenario that I just described a few moments ago. I mean, it's like a big picture comment, general big picture comment cycle, and you got to always make that funny comparison about a weatherman making a forecast but looking out the window before he actually reports it. You may have an analysis saying this is what could happen, but you got to look at your short-term cycles and events to see if it confirms the bigger picture analysis. So let's see if that works out, but it's definitely something we're going to be watching.
Mark, the happiest of New Year's.
Same to you, Jim. It's been really fun, and I wish you the best and happiest and healthiest New Year ever, and also to all our listeners.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. He was speaking to us from Arizona. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at HowStreet. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Best of the new year.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.